Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at the coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Doers, mowing season is here. With Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, you can get gas like power with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower for just $329. With a runtime of nearly an hour, it's the perfect mower to tackle your half-acre lawn without a trip to the gas station. Just push and mow. Your grass won't wait, so buy it online and pick it up in-store to get out there sooner. Get gas like power this spring with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower just $329 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
And now,
it's time for
Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast.
Hi, welcome to Inside Conan.
Hello, we're back. We're back. It's 7 days later and we're back. I'm Mike Sweeney.
I'm Jesse Gaskell.
And what are we? We work at the Conan Show.
We're
writers.
Yeah,
and now we're podcasters, I suppose.
Yeah, we're multi-hyphenates.
Yes, exactly.
And we take you every week, we go behind the scenes of the most important show in television.
Right.
According to some.
On TBS at 11 p.m.
Yeah, weeknights.
Yes.
And today we are talking to a very funny comic.
Very funny comic who has been, she's of course been on the Conan Show.
Yeah, she's done a bunch of stuff for the show.
She hosted a show for on a rooftop when we were at Comic-Con, co-hosted it, and she's been on tour with Conan.
Yeah.
So she's seen Conan from many different angles.
Yeah, and she's just a really, she's a successful working comic, so we're going to talk to her about the business of show.
Oh, yeah, screw Conan.
Yeah.
We just, yeah, of
all
course
of
we want to hear all about her exciting career and what she's been up to and what she's up to.
She's sitting here listening to all this right now.
That's why we're being so nice.
Yeah, it's Marina Franklin. Hi, Marina.
Hi.
Hi, Marina.
I was like patiently like, when do I jump in?
No, you'll wait. You'll wait for us.
So we acknowledge you.
Welcome to Los Angeles.
Thank you.
Where did you just come in from?
New York.
Okay.
Where
I got
you
in.
Live.
Yeah, where I live. And yeah, so being in LA is different. Yeah. Like I got out to walk for a second and I felt anxiety because I feel like I'm being judged for walking.
Walking, yeah.
I don't know what that is.
Right.
Here, but. It's outside. It's
the weather's
nice.
We're supposed to get some vitamin D, but we don't do it.
Do cars slow down and people point at you? Like, look at the walker. Look at that.
They do. They stop.
And then they call the police.
Oh, God.
No pedestrians allowed.
I was nervous yesterday because I came into LA and I'm staying with a buddy, a friend, and he gave me a key and it didn't work.
Oh.
And so I'm like trying to get, it looks like I'm breaking into his place.
No.
And there were several people who walked by, kind of stopped, paused with their dogs. Everyone has a dog.
Yes.
And.
But they don't walk them. They drive them around.
I wish that had been true.
Ooh, the back seats are a mess.
Yes. Ooh. So yesterday I was just like, oh no, someone's going to call the cops on me because I look like I'm breaking in.
Oh,
well, then you just turn your phone on and then it becomes a viral moment.
Yes.
And then now suddenly you're catapulted to fame.
It could have been, but instead I was bougie about it and I Ubered to my friend's house in North Hollywood.
Oh.
Hung out with her on the roof.
Oh, so did you ever end up getting into the place?
No, I did not. And they were inside. My friend was inside sleeping.
What time was this?
This is a very lazy friend.
Yeah. It was like 4:30.
Oh,
in the
my
afternoon,
God.
And mm-hmm. he fessed up later that he was there, but was,
no, he I knew he was there.
Oh,
he told me he was there, yeah. And I was like, "I'll be back." Came back, he was like, "I'm taking a nap." I was like, "All right," but he assumed that I'd get in with the key,
right?
So then I did not get in,
but also a 4:30 nap. That's a I don't know. That's
he's, He's like,
that's a depressive
sad,
snap.
I think, yeah. Right now. That's another thing. Like, you end up visiting someone, you're like, what? Yes. Should we talk?
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't want to stay with him.
No.
But so then that's a lot of pressure on you. And so now it's like, do you have to be the intervention person?
Yes, I do.
Is he a performer or an actor? Or
he's a comedian. A very funny comedian.
I was going to guess. That he was a comedian.
Yeah. When you hear napping at 4:30.
4:30.
For the big 8:30 gig.
He has been on the road a lot, too, but yeah. I was concerned about that nap at 4:30.
It's like, why? Just go to bed.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's not that much.
He was actually that deep sleep. I mean, I rang the doorbell 10 times.
Wow.
And then I was going to go through the back, but I don't know the neighborhood.
Yeah.
Right. And I've heard too many stories about Black people knocking on the door and trying to figure it out.
Their own apartment.
Yes. Yeah. So I was like, you know what? This is actually scary now. So I just took a lift to my friend's house, and then he eventually called me back like 3 hours later.
Well, because I'm white, I would have taken the key and tried every door in every house on that street.
And one of and the, said, it would have worked in one of them.
Somebody needs to house me. That's my attitude.
Oh, you know? The luxury.
But, it's an amazing, amazing life.
Before we got on, Marina, you were telling me that you haven't done stand-up in a week, and that's like the longest you've ever gone.
Yeah, it feels so weird.
That's a long time for
stand-up.
It is
a long time. I mean, 2 days is a long time. And I haven't been on stage since last Thursday.
I think that's really, I don't think a lot of people understand or know that, that's common, that comics usually feel the need, like if they go one day without performing, it's like,
they got to get that dopamine fix.
Lose 0.005 of the speed and
just the speed, the timing. The nuances, the timing. Uh-huh. Like I was telling you, there's certain little parts to the joke that after like a week of being off, you'll see it. You'll feel it on stage. You'll just feel like, oh, wait, there was a tag there that I completely forgot.
Right.
Yeah.
You feel underwater almost like just.
It's like a
rusty.
Fitness. Yeah.
Yes,
it's
exactly.
Like a muscle. And if you don't work it out.
It's like getting back on the bike after not being on a bike for a very long. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's strange though, because you would think like it's an act that I've been doing for years,
it
would be right there, you know, but
it's kind of scary. It makes it like, what would happen if I took 2 weeks off? would just not leave my apartment.
If you feel as if, like a week off, you feel like the funny goes.
Right.
It's really, it's a scary feeling. And I was just, like I told you, I was like, I'm in LA. Should I go up?
Right. Yeah.
Should I find somewhere to get on? There's a little bit of a panic setting in
because
I'm thinking about that first set back. Sometimes I'll tell the audience, it's been a while. So here we go.
Right. Oh, do you tell them that?
I do tell them. I'm very honest on stage.
You're
about
it's been 72 hours.
Yeah.
Going to be a little rusty.
Yeah. And
so
they do
bear with me.
They don't. And you're right. The audience doesn't know.
Mm-mm.
They like a lot of my friends will go, so wait, you go on every single night in New York, pretty much. If I take a night off, sometimes even your comic friends will be like, you're not getting up tonight?
Right. Oh, no, you definitely hear it.
Mm-hmm.
And in New York, I don't know if it's the same, but, you know, there are a lot of clubs and you can cab it from one to the other. I assume there are nights with multiple shows. So I bet you're almost like, oh, I'm only doing one set tonight.
I used to freak out about one set, but as you get older, you're like, it's okay.
It's not bad.
Because I used to do 5 or 6 shows in one night.
Right.
And I would take I would run around. I would take cabs from rushing from ones. Because, you know, if you work like the Comedy Cellar, that's the priority.
Down in the village.
And then you want to make sure you keep those spots. And then you get the other spots. You get your spot. Like times in the middle of the week, and then you realize how close they are to the other times. So one's like lower in the village, and one is all the way up on the Upper West or East Side.
Wow.
And you've got to kind of in your mind go, I can't really cancel these spots because I want to keep the relationship going.
Yeah.
So you have to figure it out. And so this was back when there was no Ubers or Lyfts.
Oh my God.
So
you're just sprinting.
Just cabs.
cabs.
Running
and again,
outside. And
I hate to be black again in this moment, but catching a cab when you black and even nice and smiling, it's very difficult. So a lot of times it was just this aggressive move that I would have to make to get to my next spot.
Just like jump in when.
Mm-hmm. So that's just like another obstacle for a black woman comic.
God, there's so many.
Yeah. No, it's like.
The from hair bad keys to cabs. Yeah. But and then once you get your spots, right, early in the week, and if some are too close, you start doing the swaps with other comedians. Like, hey, it's like switching work times with a coworker.
Yeah.
Like,
shifts. Yeah. Yeah.
And have you been on stage where someone else is late and you have to, and they give you the stretch signal?
Yep. And that's scary.
And you're like, I got to go. I have another set.
And they're like, oh, you know, David Tell is in a cab. He's on his way. And you just have to go until he walks through the door. Or the other one is when you're running late and then it's just like, oh my God, everyone's going to be mad.
I was running late. My brother was in town, but it was during the blackout in New York City.
The recent blackout.
The recent blackout that just happened a few weeks ago. Yeah. My brother never visits, and I was able to get him seats at the Comedy Cellar.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't know there was a blackout. Like, that was how much of a blackout it was. Like, I had no idea this was going on.
Right.
So I had a Lyft driver all the way uptown, and he didn't know either. You know, like, so... I found out, like, because the subway system is always messed up. So when the woman said, there's no trains working, I just assumed that's
normal.
It was
normal, right. Yeah.
Then I walk up from 116th to 125th Street, which is a walk when you're trying to catch, get somewhere on time.
In August.
And I get to that,
or July, that is super hot and awful.
So I get to the subway on 125th Street, and a girl, she's like, ain't no trains running. Another one. He's like, ain't no trains. I go, what do you mean? She goes, it was an electrical outage downtown. So I'm still thinking it's just an electrical outage. That's it. Then I realize he puts the radio on in the lift. It's a blackout. Oh, my God. I'm not getting to my spot. I text Liz, the manager at the Cellar. I said, listen, she's like, it's going to be fine. It's a blackout. Well,
Did they have electricity?
Yes.
Oh, they did. Okay.
She said, it's fine. Everyone's screwed up. It's okay. Don't stress. Just get here when you get here. So I my brother's
They put your brother on stage. he did great.
He's actually pretty good. But she's like, Dave is on. It's fine. I don't get which Dave she's talking about. I'm thinking it's Dave Attell.
Right?
Letterman? So,
Yeah.
Oh,
that would have been wild.
That would be interesting.
David Letterman?
Coolier.
So I get down there, and it's Dave Chappelle.
Oh, wow.
Which is a whole different story and meaning for so, like, because Dave Chappelle being on stage means not only is he on, he's going to be on for a while.
Yes.
And that means I am definitely not.
For 3 hours.
Right.
Yeah. So it's just like, oh, you're not going on.
Oh.
And your brother's never going to.
Oh,
so
no.
And your brother's like, yeah, that's okay. I was fine without you.
Oh, yeah. He was with his friends. He was getting like, he got Judd Apatow. He got Dave Chappelle. He got Bill Burr. I've never seen him happier.
Wow. That's a really good show.
How long was Chappelle on for? How long does he do now when he just drops in?
Well, I'm assuming now. From when I couldn't get the subway, he was on stage to getting down there. So at least 30, 40 minutes.
Yeah.
Maybe an hour.
And that, wow. That's another thing for comedians is so many nights, you know, if you're at a club like that, the Comedy Cellar, where these big names can just drop in.
And then you get bumped.
I've seen so many times people are about to go on and then just like, whoops, Jerry Seinfeld. And he just waltzes us in. Hey. And you know, it's like, we're bringing Jerry right up. And then I've seen nights where just.
And then you don't want to go up after that person.
Well,
you end up.
That's a
you
good
have
point.
To.
And you have to.
Oh, and when you're new, sometimes it's when you've just passed at the Comedy Cellar.
Wow.
It's almost like that's just part of it.
Yeah.
You end up following someone like that to remind you where you're working, to remind you why you've been passed and where you've been passed. Because when I first passed at the Comedy Cellar, I think I followed, Chris Rock.
Wow.
That first weekend.
Can you tell us a little, like, for the layperson, what does it mean to get passed at the Comedy Cellar?
So the Comedy Cellar is like, you guys are so good. You feel... You fill in all the detail, boy.
No, we just had a big conversation about this yesterday. This was very funny for us.
No, it's really great that you ask these questions because I just realized this about myself. I don't give... I've kind of like very vague. I'm like a vague doctor. I don't tell you everything because I feel like you should know.
You should know, yeah.
But...
You're assuming you're talking to other doctors, but a lot of these people aren't doctors.
They don't. Yeah. So the Comedy Cellar is probably the best comedy club in the world, I would say.
In the world.
In the world. Like, people know about the Cellar, like, worldwide. Yeah,
it's clearly it's in never documentaries. Done comedy in Hungary.
Hungry.
Check out, give Budapest a try, and then tell me the Cellar's the best one in the world.
A real argument happening now. But I'll tell you, like, it at that time, it wasn't even as big as it is now, but it was still that place that you wanted to work.
Right.
And, you know, passing there meant you were going to the next phase of comedy. You were possibly going to be working with people like Chris Rock, and you would see Chappelle. You knew you were going to be working on the mm-hmm. same stage. So I ended up passing there, like, I mean, 10 years into comedy. I didn't want to audition.
Mm-hmm.
Esty, who is the booker there.
Esty.
She's like, Marina, you know, I've seen you. I've seen you on stage. You're funny. You're very funny.
Oh, that's that is a good Esty. I love
Esty. She people impersonate her.
Oh, she so doesn't?
I hope she never
okay,
hears
we'll
this.
Cut this out.
No, you can't.
Wait, she doesn't? Does she get
that? That was good enough. Right, she's okay. She will be fine with just that amount
okay,
of it.
Okay, good. We'll move on. So go ahead.
But she was like, you're funny, and I've seen you, and everyone wanted to work there, and I was too scared. And she was like, I'm scheduling you.
Oh,
it was like what you don't want
against
you
your will.
Yeah. And then right. I just auditioned. I did 5 minutes and I went up after Dave Attell on my audition.
Ooh. Dave Attell.
He was auditioning.
And it was the scariest thing ever.
And he
it was
kills
late.
In that room. Just, mm-hmm. I mean, he kills everywhere, but that is intimidating.
Yeah. Cause the audience really, when, you know, you're auditioning and you hear that reaction of for him when he's going on stage and you're sitting in the stairwell waiting to go up next because you right. think you're next, but you're not. You're actually getting bumped on your audition night by Dave Attell. Right. It's a lot of, you know,
yeah,
but that
gets
that
in your
is,
head.
That's the true test to see whether or not mm-hmm. you can handle.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so I did.
You passed.
And I passed
yeah.
and then I was on my way. And when you pass at the Comedy Cellar, like the way people treat you, is, you know, it shouldn't be different. But mm-hmm. yeah, they're like, you work the Cellar. Now you're a Cellar comic.
Yeah.
It's the great. Cellar always had a great rep, even in the mid 80s, right out of the gate. It was just every comic wanted to work there. And it was hard to get in there. It was hard to get in.
Yeah.
And just, yes, like you're saying, the last several years, its reputation and its power. It's, I mean, I've been living out here, but watching from afar, it's just amazing how big a powerhouse that place has come, other than in Hungary.
Well, you know, like going in there as a young comic, you sat at a table that looked at the table of comics at the Cellar, and you would see like Keith Robinson and Nick DiPaolo right. or, you mm-hmm. know.
It's intimidating. And they are
Greg
close.
Giraldo and yeah. all the guys. And all the guys.
All the guys.
And one female. And you would just, Lynn Coplitz was there at the time. So you would just go, this is like where I want to be, but I don't know if I'm at that level yet.
Yeah.
So you just want it to be there. And you want it to be that type of comic. Because there were a type of comic. There was a type of comic that worked the Cellar. And that was ones that I would say... They were funny off stage and on stage. There was a relationship right. you would see at the table that was natural, not contrived.
Mm-hmm. There's a table upstairs
yeah.
At the restaurant upstairs where all the comics hang out.
Right.
In the Olive Tree, the restaurant.
Olive Tree.
Yeah.
So a lot of comedy clubs don't really have that. They don't have that place where you can hang.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a place where you can sit, talk, mess with other comics. And a lot of people didn't know about that at the mm-hmm. time. Now they know. You could see customers walking in. They know about that table.
There's been articles about it in The New Yorker.
Oh, talking, right.
And it's like, oh, boy.
Yeah.
Well, and that's kind of like a second audition almost.
Yes,
having to
it
be
is.
There and then like also be on with other comics.
Right.
Are you in? Are you cool
yeah,
like that?
Can right.
you
Did
handle
it? Become
it?
Like,
can you
it always,
your,
oh, sorry. Go
no,
ahead.
No.
No. Oh, that was a fun moment.
Please.
Look at you two.
We bicker like crazy.
It used to be just kind of a wide open hangout, but is it a little bit like an A table and a B table to hang out at?
Yeah. When I was a young comic, you know, just looking at that table, I was there with like Jay Oakerson was a young comic. Mm-hmm. Those are the guys that I hung out with.
Yeah.
Jay Oakerson, Joe DeRosa, Kurt Metzger. We had this one guy, we called him the T-Bird. I don't know why we called him.
No one knows his real name.
Yeah, the T-Bird, my friend Rondell. All of us, we were scared because we would hear those guys, you know, like trashing each other, going back and forth.
Right, it's intimidating.
It is intimidating. And then they would pick on us. Patrice O'Neill would be there.
Oh, boy.
And I would love it because Patrice would bring us in. It wasn't like they were arrogant. It was like more like, oh, look at these young comics. Yeah. Let's pick on them. But it was in a loving way.
And Patrice O'Neill was, he passed away. Mm-hmm. It's almost 10 years ago, maybe?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He was a revered figure in New
still.
York comedy. Still. Yeah. People still.
Yeah.
And just, yes, he could take people apart pretty quickly. Ooh.
But it does seem, was it a thing where they could dish it out to you, but if you gave it back to them, it would be like, no. That's not cool.
I wasn't ready to give it back at the time, so they had a great time.
Yeah.
But a lot of times, it was interesting to watch them go at each other and then find out later there were phone calls that were made later to apologize.
Oh, that's so cute.
Because they went too far. They straddled that line with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
really?
Oh, yeah.
That's adorable.
That is adorable. And it makes perfect sense.
Comics with art.
Yeah,
Patrice, I'm constantly second guessing every single interaction.
I'm on the phone apologizing while I'm insulting them.
So yeah, it was great to be when I finally was passed.
Mm-hmm.
I still wasn't sure if I should sit at that table.
Yeah,
I just wasn't. And then they trashed me pretty good, but I was always had fun with it. I took it pretty well.
Yeah, no, you're pretty cool cookie, I'd say.
A cool cookie.
A cool customer.
Yeah.
You're walking in LA. I mean, nothing fazes you.
I'm a walk today.
She's unfazable. Well, it was also terrifying that Esty sits on a stool.
Or used to.
She does.
She doesn't do that anymore.
Right. Well, forget I said it.
But no, but that's the
post stool.
But she'd be 10 feet away from the stage and the gatekeeper for that club.
Is she a good laugher?
Yes.
Yeah,
okay.
She's a good laugh.
She is a good. Okay. Yeah. She really, when she enjoys it, you know.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it was an intimidating thing to audition with the woman who's booking the club sitting in that chair facing you.
Yeah.
You know, the audience is there, but you don't even see them.
It's for her.
It's for her. You feel like it's for her. Yeah. And then on the weekends, mostly, or I guess even during the weekdays, she would sit in that chair and watch. And see if you can stay in the club. So it's not just after you pass, you're not just in.
Right.
Like you said, the table is like an audition. Yeah. Are you cool?
Yeah.
Are you a cool cookie?
Right.
And then can you maintain that stage presence or whatever you did on that night? Can you maintain that weeks after?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Yeah.
I got kicked out of the Comedy Cellar for one night I was hosting and I found a water bug and I did a ventriloquist act with the water bug up on the piano. I heard Manny didn't like that. So I had to go away for a year.
No.
It was going to lower their health rating, probably.
Exactly. They're like, what do you do? What are you pointing out that there's a water bug there?
That's so funny, though.
Yeah, but so I was back a year later. No more bugs.
Yeah, we all get the boot, too. That's the thing. We all have that moment where we've messed up on stage, and I had that.
Oh, how do you – what does it mean to mess up on stage?
Like what Mike, what you were just saying, it's
you found a water bug.
I found my water bug. I had my water bug moment.
Yeah,
and I kind of knew I was out. Like I wasn't getting as many spots, mm-hmm. and so I just went other places.
Was it because
for a while.
of a like a topic that you were covering? I mean,
I didn't handle a situation that well. I was hosting. So I did a lot of hosting at the Cellar. And before, like now they have so many shows, like four shows a night, or five, I think. Yeah. And before it was just like one show, one very long show.
From 9 p.m. to 2 a.m.
And you would host the whole night.
Oh, 5 hours.
Wow.
The whole night. That's and so there material. Was a little break in the middle. And that break, that's what they called it. The break was where the host would sometimes still stay on stage while they sat people in the room. Mm. That was before, obviously, everything, people were rushing to the Cellar, so they really wanted people to stay. So I didn't have that ability at the time to maintain what was going on.
You didn't have 5 hours of material.
I didn't know what to do. I was still a very like young comic, nervous. And
well, that's hard. You were supposed to be on stage performing while they're seating people?
Yes.
Oh, that's awful.
Nuts. But yeah.
That's hard.
They didn't know that was
right.
What happened to me. And the person who was running, the manager, didn't tell them that, and then I think reported that I did a bad job. So it was one of those things.
Right.
And I could see my I was like, all right, so I'm like in trouble now. And then for a while I was like, I'll just go other places and work right. and I'll get my one spot when I do it. But I won't beg. I won't be like, what happened?
Right.
Yeah.
Because I heard that never works.
That
out.
Never goes over well.
Never. Like it's crying to the booker.
Yeah. And you can't dig. Like a lot of times you never like you kind of know, you know, if you're a scenting in person, you know, if you're self-aware, you kind of put two and two together. Like, oh, I did X and now. But no one ever lays it out.
No for one says you'd had a really bad
moment. Right. They don't send you to HR.
No.
Yeah.
So you have to, you have to play cool and just say,
keep
okay.
Going.
I was lucky to have mentors, though, that told me not to do that. And they told me stories of people who called her crying.
Oh.
Oh, no.
Yes. So I was like, okay, I will. Because you do have that temptation. It's
right.
normal to be like, what did I do?
Yeah.
Did I do something
and
wrong?
And especially if you think this is, right. I'm the only person this has happened to. But then you hear, oh, this just routinely happens all the time.
Right.
Yeah. So
okay.
I'll be like that with you two after this podcast.
Call and cry.
I shouldn't have brought up Hungary. I'm sorry.
Doers, mowing season is here. With Spring Black Friday Savings at the Home Depot. Right now you can get gas like power with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower for just $329. With a runtime of nearly an hour, it's the perfect mower to tackle your half-acre lawn without a trip to the gas station. Just push and mow. Your grass won't wait, so buy it online and pick it up in-store to get out there sooner. Get gas like power this spring with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower just $329 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because the charcoal mask, great, because why would I put that on my face when I could drop it in my sink? This is what I get for multitasking. Ugh, why is charcoal so sticky?
Hello?
Hey, Janice, I am so sorry. I thought I was on mute. No, we don't need to reschedule. I'll just stay off camera. Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
So, Marina, how long have you been doing stand-up?
20 years.
Wow.
Maybe more. But
That's fantastic.
That's like saying my age.
And you're
Well, you started when you were four.
I know. Yeah, I've been doing it a long time.
Yeah. And how did you come to Conan? I mean, so what was the first thing? Did you do a set on the show, or what was the first thing you did?
I got booked. I auditioned through, I don't remember how that happened, the first one. I think I was just walking.
Well, because you had done some other.
And Conan was like, she walks? Yeah. Let's have her on.
Yeah, no, I mean.
But JP.
JP.
Yeah, he booked me. I think he saw me somewhere. I cannot remember. Contacted me, told me to put the set together. We went back and forth. Mm-hmm. And I think he was like my second late night, but really it felt like, because I did Craig Ferguson.
Yeah.
That was my first late night set.
That's a lot of, that was a lot of people's first. It was either Conan or Craig Ferguson.
Yeah. And then after that, and then JP contacted me, and JP was always like a really nice booker.
Mm-hmm. Like, unusual in that?
Yeah. Regard. Like, I like working with him. Right. I mean, and I'm not, like, blowing smoke up anyone's
Oh, right. Yeah, we won't tell him.
No.
But for real, he's just really easy to work with and figure out your set with. Mm-hmm. And so that first set I was really excited about. And, yeah, it made it easier for me on the show, actually, to have a good time.
He put you at ease.
Yeah.
Well, he's super smart and organized and really loves comedy and comedians, so yeah, that all makes sense.
I mean, there may be anxiety, but I never saw it.
Yeah,
he covers it up well if it's there. I didn't.
Yeah,
see
he
it.
Is pretty much. He's sort of monotone.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah,
he's pretty even keeled. which is probably a good asset to have in that show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How did you feel like after that first set on Conan?
That was the most fun I've had, honestly. I mean, like even the second set I had was fun, but the first it was like. Yeah, I can do this.
Yeah.
Right. And
I can sit at the A table.
It was just, and it's also because I like know everyone who works behind the scenes at Conan, like Lori Kilmartin. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. I've seen when she was in New York, I love Lori. So, and Dan Cronin.
These are both writers on our show who do stand up and started out as stand ups.
Yeah.
But Lori's still mad.
Lori's
and
like
Brian
you,
Kiley.
Where she goes up multiple times a night in LA, which is very, she'll like do a set in North Hollywood and then drive to Venice later for another set.
Yeah. She's in the car a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Lori is like that. That's what I used to admire her in New York City because I saw how she was aggressive. She would just get it done every night. And so I saw like Lori, Dan, also, I'm forgetting his name right now, but there's another one.
There's Andre Dubuchet.
Andre.
Oh, okay. Yes.
And he was one that told me about one of my jokes that I didn't know was funny. And then he was like, that joke you do about your smile fade is a very funny joke. And there's something about someone that tells you about a joke that you don't know is funny. It stays with you forever.
It does.
Because sometimes you're guessing at this stuff, really. You know, there's no writer's room for your own set.
Right.
There's just you. Mm-hmm. And so you're guessing at it and you're hoping it's good. And especially then when I was a younger comic, having him pull me to the side and say that meant a lot. So then you have all these people that you started with now, like at Conan. Mm-hmm. And these are people that I really like. They're like good people. So it put me at ease. I need that.
It makes a giant difference.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm always. I mean, when I'm writing something on my own, I'm just second guessing myself constantly. And then it's like it really requires other feedback, which I mean, you're getting from the audience too. But it is to hear it from another comic is like that's who you really want to please, right?
Yeah.
That's who you want to hear laugh.
Yeah.
And I felt so good about that set. Like I just felt good about all the material. I actually got a stylist.
Ooh.
Oh.
That's why.
How do you do that? I mean, how do you go about that?
Well, the thing is I've been told that I'm horrible fashion wise.
Oh,
who
no.
said that?
Keith Robinson.
Oh, really?
He's like, yeah, you dress. He's another comedian. He's like, you dressed awful.
Did he call
all
later to apologize?
Dress like slobs.
I'm sorry, I said that to you.
Never. He's never apologized about any attack.
That monster.
Ever.
Well, that is something, though. I mean, I think. Especially for women, you have to think about what your clothes are kind of communicating about you when you're on stage.
I've never done that, but yeah.
Well, no, but I mean, it's like it should come off like I didn't think about this too much.
It should.
But I think a lot of people do think about it, or they have jokes about what they're wearing when they come on. You know,
I've never planned the outfit for for meanings ever.
But when you got a stylist, what did they, what was the necessary look that they gave you?
So I had to then explain to my stylist what I don't even know about myself. Because I, you know, like as far as like, you know, how I would dress, like if really, if I was to dress the way I am, it would be like a Midwest mom in Illinois. With sneakers like that look like she wears
capri
them
pants?
All the time.
For like, a TV show.
For gardening. That's how, if I was to really dress, that's how I would dress.
Okay.
But he bought me on it. And he was like, Marina. He was like, okay, we're going to make you. I said, it's Conan. So Conan's a cool show. It's laid back. It's going to be fun. I don't have to look like I'm going to a corporate event. You know, I don't want that. I don't wear dresses. So, and I love the stylist because he didn't take me shopping to every little, he picked pieces and then brought them back to the dressing room. So that was the best thing for me because I hate shopping. I'm lazy. So it was so great that he would just bring these pieces back and
they
worked
just
out.
It all at once. Yeah. That's
great. Now I have a question because I always think sometimes comedians get used to a certain way of dressing and that's part of their comfort level. And did that, it didn't bother you wearing these clothes that someone else,
like it didn't throw you
like
off.
You still felt, I'm totally,
it was
Marina.
A good outfit for Conan's show. I would say the second one I did, which was for Colbert's, was he styled me for, I didn't like.
Okay.
Ah,
yeah. It was because I thought in my mind it had to be a little, he seemed more corporate. Like, I don't know. Mm. And I was wrong. I should have been more comfortable. So that show for Conan was completely me and it was perfect. So I felt really good about it.
It was more casual.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah.
I like that outfit.
Yeah. It's funny how you dress actually affects like any little thing that's off, like
I
yeah, a
can't
off
wear or something's too tight, or you're like, oh, I'm sweating into this. And,
My God, the armpits.
Yeah, so the armpit sweat. I know. That's what I'm always constantly thinking about.
And having my arms out on stage, I'm still not sure about that.
About showing your arms?
Yeah, it's like,
you have great arms.
Wear a straight jacket.
Well, yeah, I do, but it seems like kind of. It feels naked a little bit.
Yeah.
It feels kind of aggressive.
No, and you don't want people to be thinking about you. You don't want them to be sexualizing you.
Yeah, or even going, God, she does work out.
You know? Like, I wonder what her workout regimen is.
Because if I don't have material about it, then it's like, you didn't address it.
Yeah.
But I do.
I would do the whole act from off stage. So they just hear your voice. And they can't.
And just
make
a water
any
bug.
Judgments.
A water bug is.
Exactly. It's all you.
But
read
I don't
book.
Wear heels. I've seen.
Yeah.
I saw a comedian last night. I won't say who it is, but I saw their special and I was like, they look so uncomfortable in those heels.
Mm. Mm.
And you could see the heels were the nicest part of the outfit. And then everything. And I was like, this is really like, it took me out because for a while I'm still just looking at the outfit. So yeah, what you put out there is important because people will be like, well, she doesn't know herself yet.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Right.
Yeah. And they do kind of make assumptions about you based on that. Like, I would assume you're a big Bon Jovi fan based
on
your
shirt.
I am, actually. Okay.
But
well, so that's accurate.
What's really about this shirt is the Bon Jovi shirt is when I do gigs in, like, New Jersey.
Yes.
You know what you're doing.
You do know what you're
doing.
And
it's mostly a white audience. I want them to understand.
To feel safe.
Right. I want them to.
We can relate to her.
Yeah.
Should I wear the Bon Jovi or the Bruce Springsteen shirt tonight?
Yeah. I do this on purpose. When I went on tour with Conan.
Yeah.
And we did the New Jersey, the Borgata. Was it?
The Borgata. Casino.
Yeah. I wore this shirt. I was like, I know what's going to work.
Okay. Yeah. So you went from.
Look at me.
What a segue to the tour.
You did some stuff
Somebody
at Comic-Con.
Somebody podcast here.
Yeah, you do.
She knows how to move it along.
Thank you. I know. We were
Thank
struggling.
You for your help, Marina. Ooh.
But then you got to go on tour last year with Conan.
Yes.
What were the cities you went to?
So D.C., Borgata, Detroit, Michigan. Yeah, Detroit, Michigan. I think it was Detroit, yes. And then Boston.
Oh, wow.
And there was also... in New York, Portchester.
Portchester, New York.
Yes.
It's this old, the Capitol Theater?
Yes, the Capitol Theater.
Which I guess is famous because Grateful Dead used to play there once a year.
Is that for the like the up, the Hudson River Valley people or what's?
Not even on the, yes, you're getting up there toward the valley.
Okay.
Yeah, so it was those dates that I worked and it was just yeah, it was incredible. It was an incredible trip. I had the most fun. I look at the pictures still.
Oh.
I look back at it and I'm like, yeah, you're having a you really are having a good time. I was there with Rory Scovel and I'm gonna forget his name.
I know
Plula, who Conan. Oh, it's Plula. Conan. Oh, Plula.
Oh yeah, Conan.
Right. Fula Borg. Yeah, who's delightful.
Yes.
And you but you had probably toured quite a bit before that.
I do tours on and off, like different people take me on the road with them. But yeah, this was a full on, like, you know, flying, getting there.
So yeah.
Like years ago when I was on the Chappelle show, I went on tour with like Bill Burr and Donnell Rawlings. We did like a mini tour where they put me on that. And that was like fun.
Wow.
Because I was very new at doing any
of
it. Oh,
yeah. That must have been huge.
I was way too excited, actually. Because Donnell, who's also known as Ashy Larry, was like, she's embarrassing me. Look, she's all too excited.
Too
too sincere.
This.
He threw out my sneakers that I wear all the time.
He's like, no she heels.
She can't go on the tour with these, like, Midwestern sneakers. But
well, yeah. It's a, probably a big part of it. And you were saying you also just did a tour with Sarah Silverman. Is
nothing like Conan's though. Let's okay. Let's, you know, Conan's was like, hey, it was really no.
But a big part of it is the hanging out, like you know, keeping that person company. We've traveled with Conan too, and there is like, okay, we're kind of you're expected to then go out to dinner sometimes, and there's that element of
that
it.
Was the fun part actually, yeah because. Well, you know, let's be honest, like with Conan, I don't know him. So I'm like sort of like intimidated and like, oh my God, what's it going to be? You know, but like when I did his show and when I did my late night set and he came up to me afterwards, he was so genuinely kind that I was like, he put me at ease again, the whole at ease thing. So then going on tour with him, same thing. I mean, and I looked for moments. I was like, when is he going to be an ass?
Can I curse? When does the mask come off?
When does it come off? You know, never. It never did. I was looking for it so many times. And then he was like, when we were in D.C., he was going to get something to eat. And he stopped by Rory. I was with Rory and his friends. And he stopped. He goes, you guys, I'm going to eat over here. You're welcome to join me. I don't want to be that person. I was like, oh, my God.
Well, and he legitimately wants you to go. I mean, because he I think,
lonely.
Really likes talking to.
He's lonely. He's so smart, too.
No, but he'd rather. He doesn't want to eat alone. Like, he'd rather sit and eat with cool young comics.
Well, yeah. And I did get intimidated because he's so intelligent. And I was nervous that I would say something stupid. And a lot of times I think I did.
That never goes away.
Well, it just depends on
when you're around him.
Your knowledge of U.S. presidents from 1917 to 1953.
Or Elvis Presley's later years.
Yes.
Is also another area.
Yeah, when he starts talking topics. About these topics. Yeah, because he was talking about presidents and I was like, oh my goodness, I better not open my mouth at all. But I said something like to him. One time I said, yeah, they saw it peripherally and no one said anything. And then I was thinking, is that the way you say that sentence? That went on in my head for a while.
Oh, no.
And I asked Rory, do you say someone saw it peripherally or is it in the peripheral?
And I think like, peripherally works. I think that what you said works.
Absolutely.
It works.
Yeah. I wish you would.
I wish you'd talk to us sooner.
Yeah.
Because you've been carrying this around. About this.
Terrible.
And then Conan plays his guitar, like, backstage. And we, like, had a couple of, like, music moments that, like, it was just, like, took, you know, it was fun. We did, like, we made up some songs and stuff. I forget what we were doing. But I caught them all on Instagram and made them, like, it was just a fun trip. It really was.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
It was all East Coast.
I can't say there wasn't anything bad. There was no.
We're waiting.
I know. I'm trying to find out if there was a bad moment.
No, please think of one.
There wasn't. There was one night because I'm intermittent fasting that Conan was like, you've got to eat. He wanted me to eat.
Oh, he just wanted to feel better about his eating.
Right.
He was like, please don't do that. He goes, there's always a phase where there's always some like food diet Every generation has one.
Right.
And he continued to tell me, he's like, look, my father even told me, okay, there's just eat.
Well, intermittent fasting is you don't eat between certain hours.
Yep.
So do you still do that?
It's fading.
Oh, okay.
I did it for a while. Like, it's so hard when you're traveling because you're hungry.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's
tough. And performing, and you need fuel.
Fuel. And I'm a vegan now.
Oh, my gosh.
And I don't
want to
be.
Vegan and fasting?
It's so sad.
Wait, how did you become a vegan? A reluctant vegan.
Well, health issues. And like, my sister has lupus.
Oh, wow.
Not to bring it down, but she has lupus, and so I was yelling at her about her diet, and then I realized I can't really yell at her if I'm not doing it. So you're doing it
in solidarity.
Yeah. Well, I know that the plant-based diet, which is what they're aggressively telling me that I should call it more than vegan.
Right.
You know, they're so.
For your own sake, so you don't alienate.
For my own safety.
Lose all your friends.
Yeah.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. Get her.
Yeah. But it's plant-based. That's what
you don't want to be. Yes. Pigeonholed into vegan comedy.
No.
I feel like it's happening.
Oh, no.
But, so
not if you wear that Bon Jovi shirt.
I'm the coolest vegan
She's
around.
She's a meat eater. She likes Joe.
But I've taken on that whole lifestyle of veganism. And
what can we do to help?
I know.
You sound
so
really.
Oh, our producer's a vegan.
Oh,
so
he looks tired over there. Yeah.
He does okay? always look tired.
Did you have your avocado toast this morning? Yeah, with the cucumbers and tomatoes. Breakfast is weird for vegans, right? I don't feel like breakfast doesn't exist anymore. Like,
because no eggs and no
no cheese, which is so hard. The cheese part is so hard.
That is rough.
You don't like the cashew cheese?
That fake cheese.
Good luck.
Yeah. It doesn't melt.
Good luck finding a vegan restaurant out here.
I found one. I went
to
one
yesterday. There are a bunch that he's being sarcastic.
Oh. I have copies of the menu if you would like to see.
I'll check it out.
There's a nice squash burrito.
Oh. Ooh.
That sounds so
well,
awful.
Sometimes I'll have there's a lot of vegan, I don't know if you're going to go to Highland Park, but there's a lot of vegan taco stands.
That's what, yeah.
So like Friday night, it's all on York Boulevard, it's all vegan taco stands.
Ooh, I'm going to have to check
that out. You should
go
over there. And sometimes I'll try one I didn't know it was vegan until afterwards, and I'm like, oh, that was pretty good.
It was painless.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got yelled at for talking about being a vegan while eating cheese pizza.
Oh.
Because I didn't realize.
Justified.
I was new at it. Yeah, I had no idea.
And then you're like, oh, no, not cheese. I can't do this.
I was like, yeah, it's a better lifestyle, being a vegan. I was being all arrogant, eating my cheese slice. And she was looking at me kind of funny. And I didn't know until afterwards. I was like, oh, that's right.
Yeah.
No cheese either.
Next, they're going to tell you can't eat bacon.
What? You get it? I had it this morning.
Marina, we are going to have to wrap up, but tell us about your special that you just filmed.
So I just put out my first ever 1-hour comedy special, single black female. And that's it's awesome. Available on all platforms. And you can go to marinafranklin.com to find out where those links are. Because it's somehow difficult for people to understand. Where they're like, what do you mean all platforms? I mean, like all platforms, like Apple Podcast or not Apple Podcast, Apple TV.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Google Play, Amazon Prime Video, YouTube Video. And but the links are all on my website because even my mother was like, we streamed it for the first time. I've never done that. That was fun. So it's on demand on demand on TV, any on demand you have, Comcast, Spectrum, whatever you have, Xfinity.
Right.
And just to get in, you have a very nice website. I was really,
you saw it?
I went to it and I was impressed and I was like, oh, that's like not a skill that a lot of, I think, performers and creative people have is having a good navigable website.
I went to Stanford.
Oh
no, I didn't. My brother
was like,
did.
Oh, you worked in IT.
She hired a website stylist.
Yes.
The Stanford in me came out. No, I worked hard on that website because I know, like, it's really good to have, like a landing page.
Right.
Do you even know what a landing – I didn't know what a landing page was, so I had to call the guy. I go, can you – my sister's really – she's like, you need a landing page so people can see where to go.
Yeah.
So it's right there where you can see where the special is, just easy. And it's – the first time I ever did it, I taped it in Chicago.
Oh, great. Where you're from.
Yeah. At the Vic Theater. So it was like a homecoming.
Oh, wow. Oh, awesome.
For me. And I call it the wedding that I never had.
Oh, well, that's, I think that probably will last longer than a
you
wedding.
You sounded so sad. I know you're like, oh.
No, I mean, I'm not married. I support finding other things to celebrate besides just weddings.
Yeah, so it's like...
But did you spend the amount on it that you would have spent on a wedding?
No.
Oh, okay.
You made your father pay for it.
So, yeah. And everyone came that... My mom was there, my family, my... You know, it's like people I went to University of Illinois with came out. And
normal.
They... Yeah, and I don't ever perform in Chicago.
Ah.
So they've all been like, when are you going to come home and have us see something? So it was really, it was a lot of fun.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's great. Were you worried? I don't want to open another.
No.
Well, but were you worried about if you don't perform in Chicago a lot, like, oh, is this crowd going to be a little different? Or you weren't?
Yeah, I was.
Yeah.
I absolutely was because I had to work out my set like the day before.
Right.
And I did find that certain material that worked really strong in New York City was not hitting as hard.
Right.
So I had to make some changes literally the night before just to kind of really get the rhythm going of the set. Yeah. Because I was talking about the subway a lot.
Right.
And I did that in L.A. and they were looking at me like, we're car people. What? What's your subway issue?
It's that walker we saw at the airport. Get her.
So, yeah, it was. But doing it, the Chicago audience is also, I don't think. Well, now they're getting more comedy, but they're very like, I think in New York, everyone gets comedy. Everyone gets it. So like in Chicago, it was like the excitement for comedy is different.
Yeah. They were hungry for
a little bit more. So it was a great place to do it. That theater, incredible.
The big question, what did you wear for a Chicago audience?
Leather.
Ooh.
Eddie Murphy.
I was going to guess an Obama shirt.
Oh, that would have been wonderful. But no, all leather.
Wow.
Yeah, I was like, it's like an homage to Eddie Murphy.
Yeah.
All black leather. I had a different stylist. Different one. And he was fun because he made it work for me. Because I told him, I said, no heels. Nah.
Yeah.
No heels.
Yeah.
Great sneakers, though. Everyone. Ooh. When guys comment on your sneakers, and they go, those are tight.
Mm-hmm.
That's a Chicago thing. I think it's not. That's
just
regional.
Say tight.
And it's regional, and it shows my age. Those shoes were tight.
Tight shoes.
So I look good. And it was probably the best hour out. No. But you should go see it. It's fun.
Yeah.
Every part of who I am is in that special. Single, black, and female.
Yeah. Right.
The big three.
The trifecta.
Yes.
So easy to find.
On your website.
On my website, marinafranklin.com.
Thank you, Marina. And I hope you have a good rest of your trip to LA.
Yes. I hope.
Get some good vegan food.
May the keys in your future open doors.
Every door.
Oh, my God. You remember that.
Yeah, it was like 20 minutes ago. I've been paying attention.
The keys to my heart.
Oh, well,
that's sounds another
like
story.
He's got
that,
those.
That one's locked up.
Oh.
Ain't no key.
What are you looking at?
Thanks, Marina. Hey, I thought we might do something we haven't done in a while.
Yes, what would that be?
Answer listener questions.
Oh, that is long overdue.
It is. I know. We announced it, and then we kind of never went back to it.
Yes. Gee, how shocking for us to lack follow through. Let's do it.
Yeah. So we had a lot of emails that we had to catch up on. Here is one from Jason. He says, hey, gang, does it ever happen that after shooting something, you or Conan realizes that a comedic opportunity was missed? I mean, yes,
never.
All the time.
Yes, of course, all the time.
I lie awake in bed at night thinking about all the missed comedic opportunities.
Just awful.
And then he goes on, in the Conan Without Borders episode in Japan, when Conan was at the bidet factory, it seems like one such situation might have occurred. Conan was asking how the bidet knows where to shoot the water, and the employee told him it hits an average spot. I was waiting for Conan to say something along the lines of, an average spot? Who's measuring this? And then proceeding to demand to talk to the official rectum measurer or some such. Perhaps this did occur, but didn't make the show. If that's the case, I look forward to the Scraps episode that includes it.
Oh, well, thanks for the email. I know that nothing was overlooked.
Yeah, that was a very specific.
That's a very specific.
I have to say that that did not happen, Jason.
It did not, Jason. But you know what? We were at the Toto Toilet Showroom.
Yes.
And there were other things we wanted to do that they were very controlling.
They were. It was. They were surprisingly controlling, and they did not.
As we tried to crap all over their products.
Well, we wanted to have Jordan.
Yeah.
Sit on a toilet.
Exactly.
With his pants down.
Right. And pretend.
And pretend to be using it with a dance belt.
Right.
Which we talked about before, that we often use dance belts to instead of nudity.
Right.
But
that went up the corporate chain while we were there.
Yes.
And three guys and the president came of out Toto of the office. Yes.
Denied our request.
Right.
So we weren't able to do that.
No. And then no, and we didn't do the average spray one. No. I think that would have been actionable as a lawsuit if we started measuring the distance between certain southerly organs.
But that whole segment kind of got derailed because Jordan kept saying the word anus.
Oh my God. Jordan went insane.
He went insane.
His software malfunctioned and he
went on the fritz. Yeah.
And plus he started laughing at himself.
Oh my God. Well, that's
anus.
The thing I've realized. Jordan really laughs a lot at potty humor.
He loves scatological bathroom humor. We learned that in Italy.
Yeah.
Where he started
talking.
Because
he started talking about the bidets in Italy.
And set himself into hysterics without anyone else. And no one else laughed.
No.
Everyone just was staring at him.
And that's the only time that Jordan really breaks while we're filming.
Yes.
And then he just can't control it.
Right. We could never shoot a scene with him in a men's room, I realized. He'd be a puddle.
Well, that he probably doesn't want us to learn that he's just smooth down there.
Mm.
Here's another one. This is a question for Mike Sweeney.
That's me.
That's you. Hey, Mike and Jesse. This is from Patrick.
Hey, Pat.
How did the idea and execution for the Lincoln Money Shot channel come to fruition? Come to fruition from back in the late night days? And bonus question, how did it feel to act in the title role? I imagine it must have been very strange, but amusing. I remember it being one of the most unexpected yet funny things I have ever seen on TV.
All right. I like the first question better. The second one.
So how did it come to be?
Well, we used to do fake satellite channels on the old late night show.
Yeah.
And they were, so this one was called the Lincoln Money Shot. I hope that's self-explanatory. As Abraham Lincoln.
He's on the money.
Right, exactly. It's him, you know, at that
coming to fruition.
Moment. Exactly. So in several scenarios.
Yes.
That was written and produced by Brian McCann.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic writer and performer on our show.
Who we just interviewed.
Yep. And I was the actor in it, and I had never orgasmed before, but I watched some videos and kind of tried to ape that look.
At that time, were you the head writer for the show?
No, I think that's why I got hired to be the head writer.
Because
I know I could do an orgasming link, and Conan said, I want that, more of that.
But you did have white hair at that point.
I had what?
You had white hair?
No, it was kind of white. I went white pretty early. All this internal stress that manifests itself. My hair turning white at age 38.
Well, yeah, but that it remains one of the most iconic
It's crazy. For a while, there was a band called Lincoln Money Shot.
Oh, a real band?
They named themselves after it.
Oh, my
and,
God. Did your sons
never asked me
tell
to
you
go
about
tour.
It?
My children, I've never discussed it with my kids. guys, I was playing a role. And my wife has steadfastly refused to ever watch it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure she may have.
Well, let's not even discuss it.
please. I'm sorry. Is that one of the clips that is going to be available as part of the Conan 25?
What a segue. I guess. I mean, right, it's online.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's quick.
It is quick.
You watch it, you get in and out. It's Lincoln Money Shot. Yeah. I get it.
Mm-hmm. That was a great segment, though, because it really allowed you could kind of do anything on those.
Oh, the old satellite TV channels.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, it's a really good refillable.
They are. They
bucket.
Are actually, to answer your question, they're putting them all together.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's going to be a giant data dump.
Oh, of all the satellite TV.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I must be in the hundreds. So you can just gobble
wow.
them.
Ugh.
Like hazelnut M&Ms.
Yeah. Okay, one more.
Yeah.
From Ken. Hi, Mike and Jesse. I'm interested to know the inside story on Conan's hair. What's his hair routine? Who makes him up? How long does it take? Is he obsessive about it? Does he let people touch it? Does he have nicknames for it? Is he sensitive to jokes about it? What's the official color name for the dye he uses?
I like the last. The last one's the only one I haven't heard yet.
Come on, come on, come on. What's the before. Scuttlebutt
on
the
his
haircut?
Hair.
Yes. Well, there is an actual Pantone color that is the Conan
oh,
orange,
right.
right?
It came out this year.
Yeah. I forget what the number is.
I've never heard of Pantone until then.
So okay. Let's start with what's his hair routine?
Okay.
Well, because he does. So the hair becomes much higher for the show than it normally
does.
Is around
it does.
The office.
And I'm I'm always like, does it have to be that high?
Yeah.
But it just goes up and up. The closer, it's almost like it senses the show's going to start and it climbs on its own to
yes.
new heights.
It engorges.
Yes.
It's funny. I think that maybe Conan started drawing that cartoon version of himself.
Right.
And then he started having to do the hair to match the cartoon
yes,
version.
Yes, he's very on brand.
Yes.
At all times. The drawing matches the real hair.
But he can do that himself, which he does.
Yes.
On travel shows.
But I've seen him in the chair here sometimes. He'll look in the mirror and just go, and his hair's being worked on. He'll just be like, oh, give me that. And he'll grab the brush and
he wants to
give it an extra little
tease.
A little extra little height.
Yeah. But there is a hair and makeup team.
Yes, of
course.
That works
at the show. And
they're
should probably
exhausted.
Have them on at some point.
Sure. They're the hardest working team in showbiz. We'll have them on.
Yeah. And he does. Okay, I'll answer some other things. Does he let people touch it? I think he
absolutely.
Likes for people to touch it.
Yeah.
It's not like a whatever spray he uses. It's not a solid hold. So it's pliable.
Right. Should we encourage people, like if you see
maybe.
Him in public, just go up
go
and
up
touch
and
his hair.
It. Give him a noogie.
He'll thank us later.
And then they say, what's the official color name for the dye he...
That's a
good question. So we should clarify.
I just thought that was his hair color.
Yeah. I don't know for sure that he dyes it.
I don't know either. I mean, if that happens, I don't know where or when it happens.
I know. I don't know either.
That's a mystery.
We might not have that level of security access.
Yeah. Man.
It's that and Area 51.
I know his freckles are drawn on every day. It's a laborious. Each one pinpoint, put
yes.
like Surratt painting, put on and then washed off
you
at the end
just
of the
get
day.
Them tattooed.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
We'll suggest that.
All right. Well, that's our round of listener questions for this time. But you can ask some. You probably forgot that we even did this. But you can email us at insideconanpod@gmail.com. Or you can actually call us on the phone if you still know how to do that. And it's 323-209-5303. All data messaging rates apply. I don't know what that means.
Oh, I
but
think
it sounds
you do.
Right.
You get a piece of that pie.
Okay, well, that's our show for this
Thank
week.
You. Thanks Thank for you listening. For listening.
We like you.
Yeah, yeah.
Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast, is hosted by Mike Sweeney and me, Jesse Gaskell.
Produced by Kevin Bartelt.
Engineered by Will Becton.
Mixed by Ryan Connor.
Supervising producer is Aaron Blaird.
Associate producer, Jen Samples. Executive produced by Adam Sachs and Jeff Ross. Jeff Ross at Team Coco. And Colin Anderson and Chris Bannon at Earwolf.
Thanks to Jimmy Vivino for our theme music and interstitials.
You can rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts.
And of course, please subscribe and tell a friend to listen to Inside Conan on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or whatever platform you like best.
Ta-da!
This has been a Team Coco production in association with Earwolf.
With Spring Black Friday deals at the Home Depot, you can give your lawn or garden beds a pop of color and protection. Right now, get a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10. Help your soil retain moisture longer with color that lasts up to 12 months. Shop Spring Black Friday deals for a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Color selection varies by store. Limit 60 bags per customer while supplies last.